This Is Your Life, Season 1, Episode 1.
This is Michael Hyatt. Welcome to the all-new episode of This Is Your Life. We've changed everything, and I'm delighted this time to introduce you to my new co-host, Michelle Cachat. Did I say that right?
Yes, I think you did.
We were talking about the peculiarities of her name. Like, it's one L on Michelle, and Cachat rhymes with hat.
There, you got it. After 7 years of being friends, you finally pronounced my name right.
I mean, she didn't ever correct me. Well, look, our goal is still to help give you the clarity, the courage, and the commitment you need to do what matters. And that's what the show's going to be about. It's what it's going to continue to be about. But I really want you to get to know Michelle in this episode. We're going to talk about why we changed the show. And most importantly for you as a leader, we want to talk about what change means for you, how you manage it, why it's important, and why sometimes you just have to break things even when they're not broken. That's what we've done here.
So, absolutely.
So delighted to have you with me.
It's such an honor for me to be here. I am beyond excited. So I'm trying to contain all of that enthusiasm. Otherwise, I could just like jump up and down right here, right now. So thank you so much
for
giving me this opportunity.
Well, it's just been awesome to know you for the last 7 years. And for those of you that don't know, Michelle and I have worked together on several projects. Mm-hmm. She worked with me on my Get Published product, which is a publishing product that we did together. In addition to that, we work on all the Dynamic Communicators conferences together. She's not only our MC for the launch, score, and platform conferences, but also as a speaker at each of those conferences. And we've just had a terrific time because we share a lot of the same values and a lot of the same friends and all of that. So this was a natural to pick you for this spot.
Thank you for that. You know, I've done a lot of projects over the years, but to this day, and I tell people this all the time, the Get Published program that we did, and we recorded 21 sessions in this very studio.
I know.
To this day, is one of my favorite projects ever. We had so much fun, it didn't even feel like work. So to be back here doing the same thing again for me, you know, I have to admit, it doesn't really feel like work anymore. It's just a good time. It's fun.
I that's how I felt when I got up today, because today, actually, when we're recording this, is my literal birthday. And I felt like this is a great present to be able to be in the studio with you and to be able to change the way that we're doing everything. I'm one of those rare people that loves change. And not everybody loves change, but we're going to talk about that as we go through this, because I think there's something important in there for leaders to be able to grasp, because if there's one thing we all experience is change. But let's start with your story.
All right.
So,
speaking of change.
You were born at an early age. We get that.
I was born a long, long time ago.
So tell us a little bit about your story and what brought you to this point.
Okay. I'll give you the very fast Cliff Notes version. I was raised by two wonderful parents, a very faith-based home, and had all kinds of dreams growing up of what I was going to do. And then, as we all kind of know, life sometimes throws a curveball. And that's kind of what happened to me. I actually went to school, got a bachelor's degree in nursing. So believe it or not,
I am a
registered nurse. Isn't that crazy?
So in case we have an emergency on the set,
well,
you're
prepared. You know, it's been a long time since I've practiced, so you might want to have a plan B.
Okay.
And then I found myself in a situation where I was a mother of a 1.5-year-old. And right before Christmas one year, my husband left. And so, completely unexpectedly, I became a single mom and started over. I was in my mid to late 20s, and so I had to completely reinvent myself. So I had to change careers, because a nursing career, working 12-hour shifts, didn't necessarily work with being a single mom, and really start brand new, start over. And so at that point, I started doing a sales job.
Really?
Yes.
I could see you in that.
Yeah, I did sales for several years, which was a really great kind of 8-to-5 job. Found out that I loved it, had a little bit of a knack for it. And then I met this Prince Charming. Well, he's not quite that perfect, but he is pretty wonderful. And I got remarried. He had two boys and had been in an unexpected divorce as well. And we got married and started blending our families, which was a whole new adventure.
Wow.
Let me tell you. Family is beautiful and difficult and challenging, but you have no idea until you have a blended family what it really can be like.
I can't even imagine.
Absolutely. So we have now been married for 13 years. We have three boys that are now 22, 20, and 17. This is where you say, you can't possibly be old enough to have children that old.
Look, I was just thinking to myself, you can't possibly be old enough to have boys that old.
Thank you. Thank you. I so appreciate that. But it gets even more complicated than that. My story is one where it's just been one unexpected occurrence after another. Hmm. So just about the time that I think I have my life managed and under control, just something unpredictable happens. And 3 years ago, on 2 days before Thanksgiving, I got a phone call from a doctor that nobody wants to get. And I was diagnosed with cancer. Now, that's usually a huge conversation stopper, isn't it?
It is. What do you say after that?
Exactly. And so that really started to change the way that I viewed life and the way that I viewed family. Hmm. Anytime you have that kind of life or death scenario, it makes you want to make the most of your life, which is really what you do here on this podcast, right?
Yeah, right.
Your life is a gift. Yeah. Go make it count. And that's what I started. That became kind of a theme of my life, that I wasn't going to waste any more days. Every day I'm going to wake up and make the most of it. And so in the last 3 years since then, we've had additional, you know, challenges. And I'm an entrepreneur and business owner. My husband is an entrepreneur and a business owner as well. We have our three sons. And then in the middle of all of this kind of cancer recovery and life after cancer, it gets even more interesting when we got a phone call, this time from a friend who knew of a mom who had three children that she could no longer take care of.
Unbelievable. I mean, on top of everything you were going through, then to get this phone call.
I know.
Yeah.
And so, this mom, due to some choices of her own, she couldn't take care of her three kids anymore. At the time, they were twin 4-year-olds and a 5-year-old. We were almost empty nesters. I mean, on the verge.
Could see the finish line.
You know, we call it empty nest. I have a new name for it after raising kids. You know what the empty nest
is? What is it?
It's the promised land.
Perfect. I'm living in the promised land,
yes,
and it's awesome.
I'm a little bit resentful, I have to say. But anyway, so we are almost to the promised land, and then we started parenting all over again. So within 24 hours of getting that phone call, we went and picked up three more children. And for the last 3 years, we have been a family of eight. So we have the oldest is 22, and the youngest now is twins that are 7.
Did you say all of them are living at home now, too?
Well, 4 of the 6
four
are living
at home. 4 of the 6,
okay. Yeah, 2 of them live in town, but they live on their own. So, all of that, that's kind of my story, 42 years in brief. But, kind of the theme is that we never know what's going to be around the bend. We don't. And so part of leading is learning to adapt and mm-hmm. to change and adjust and take what comes and figure out the nugget and the richness or the treasure that's there and deal with it. It's not hard or it's not easy. It's very difficult and hard. And then find kind of the lesson or the truth or the gift that's in the middle of it and turn around and pay it forward.
Well, I know enough about you to know that you're a recovering perfectionist. In fact, what's the tagline on your blog?
Making peace with an imperfect life.
Yeah, I love that. And you're a planner.
Mm-hmm.
So you like to plan.
Yes.
But you had all these unplanned things come into your life. How did you adapt to that as somebody who's perfectionistic and likes to plan? And I mean, what was the process for you?
How did I adapt? Not well. Let's just say I did not adapt to it well. It's not easy. I mean, the good news is these things kept happening and it gave me lots of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just, at some point you have to let go. You control what you can control and you have to let the rest go. And there's so much that we have no control over. And so what we do have control over is our attitude about it and how we approach it, how we respond to it, and how we choose to live in the middle of it. And that's what I can take control of.
That's awesome. Okay. I wanted to explore one other aspect of your background before we shift.
I'm ready to be done talking about me.
Okay. I want to talk about you a little bit more.
Okay.
So I want you to talk a little bit about your work as a speaker and a writer, because I'll say this because she won't say this about herself, but Michelle is one of the very best speakers I've ever heard, male or female. She's awesome.
Thank you.
Even though you give the same speech pretty much at our conferences each time, I can almost guarantee that I'll be brought to tears every time. I mean, you're great at not only hitting the emotional buttons, but giving real clarity and real content that's valuable.
Thank you.
And as a writer also, I mean, you can just hear her talk about how vulnerable she is and all that comes through in her writing as well. And I should say also, you've got a new book that's coming out next year called Undone. Give us the subtitle.
A Story of Making Peace with an Unexpected Life.
Yeah, this is going to be an awesome book that you all are going to want to read. So just a little bit of preview. We'll give a whole episode to that, maybe more when the book comes out. But that's how we all find ourselves, kind of undone like that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So back to your speaking and your writing. How'd you get started in that?
kind of stumbled upon it. So, you know, I had this history as a nurse, and then, I was a stay-at-home mom and a wife. And I happened to be at an event where I actually emceed this event. So I found myself on stage holding a microphone, which is something I never had done. And a couple people in the audience heard me and said, you kind of have a knack for this. You ought to think about speaking. And one of those people had attended this conference called the Dynamic Communicators Workshop, which is now the SCORE Conference, and she recommended that I attend as a student. So this was 8 years ago. I signed up, and 2 months later, I got on a plane and flew to the SCORE Conference. And while I was there, I mean, it's just, as you know, just the best thing out there for training speakers.
Absolutely.
And helping people develop their messages. And it completely transformed me as a communicator and gave me a new passion for the art of communication. And so that's just kind of the start. But since then, I've just been learning and growing and processing this whole idea of communication. And what I feel like is my specialty, or what I really enjoy doing, is I help people kind of identify, develop, and deliver powerful content, whether it's written or spoken or in their jobs, with their teams, whatever it is. I try to take their big ideas and boil it down to the heart of their message and help them to craft it and then deliver it in a way for maximum impact. That's what I do.
Well, I'll tell you, the beauty of that is that for most of us, for me even, it's hard sometimes to see the message, what the real message ought to be. And Michelle's been working with me on a speech that I'm going to be giving here shortly. And she saw some things and pulled out of me some things that I would have never seen for myself if I didn't have that objective kind of point of view.
Well, that's the goal, and that's what I hope to bring here with this podcast. All right, I'm done talking about myself. We are finished.
Okay.
It is your turn to be in the hot seat. And let me tell you, I have been waiting a long time to kind of have your undivided attention so I can just pepper you with questions.
Oh, here we go.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's go. So now, your podcast, as you know, just a while ago, you did your 100th episode. We are now on, we called it episode one, season one, episode one. Maybe we should unpack that because you've changed the numbering. What in the world are you thinking?
Well, the first 100 episodes, I'm considering kind of season zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that the television world packages things as seasons, because it kind of gives you a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then you can kind of move on to the next season. And so that's what we're going to do here, approximately 13 episodes in a season. So I think everything that I've learned in the first 100 episodes has been a warm-up to what you and I are going to do in these new seasons. So that's why I want to call this season one, first 100 episodes, season zero.
Excellent. Nice. Okay. So for the first 100 episodes, honestly, it was going really well. I mean, you are consistently in the top 10 on business podcasts on iTunes. You get tons of downloads. I believe you said, as of the last episode, over 5 million downloads.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. So if it's been doing so well and you have such success, why in the world are you changing it up?
Well, the world's changing. And there are more podcasters than ever before. I mean, there's so many reasons I could talk about. One of the main reasons is I just wasn't enjoying doing it. That for all the success, and I kind of learned this the hard way in the corporate world, is that you can't look merely, you got to look externally some, but you can't look merely at the externals and the statistics and all sort of the outward trappings of success. Because if your heart's not in it and you don't have passion about it, it's really time to look for a better solution.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, there's got to be a better way to do this that could involve my heart, that I could really enjoy it, still bring passion to it, and deliver everything and kick it up to the next level. And sometimes, Michelle, I found that you have to just break things to do that, or be willing to do that. And I like what Seth Godin says. He says, he kind of uses this as an indicator, but when you can begin a project and say this might not work, you're probably right where you need to be. And that's where it is with the podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, this might not work. There's some risk involved. There's probably people that are going to listen to the podcast now and say, we like it how you did it before better.
Of course.
And that's inevitable.
Yeah.
But truth be told, I got complaints about the podcast as it was, as a monologue. Some people said, it'd be a lot more interesting if you'd bring on a co-host or if you'd start interviewing people or whatever. So no matter what you do, you're going to get criticism. So that cannot be the barometer.
Absolutely.
Because then you become a people pleaser, and I am a recovering people pleaser. I mean, I'm certified in that.
And I am too. We could probably hang plaques on the wall.
We could, yeah. But when that becomes kind of your your indicator of what you're going to do, kind of the rudder in your boat, it's a really bad one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a lot of soul searching over several months. I talked to my family about it. I talked with my colleagues about it. I talked with a few outside friends, including other podcasters, and all of them had an opinion. And then I kind of got alone with myself and I just said, what do I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of having a co-host, and honestly, you were the first person I thought of. But I thought this makes sense because I think that Michelle will ask me the kind of questions that will allow us to go deeper
mm-hmm.
and unpack this stuff. And there's a shot that we could take the show to the next level and make it even more useful, which is what I want. I want to add value to people's lives. Yes. And I thought this was the opportunity to do that.
And what's interesting, inviting a different voice, and I'm a female, which is obviously
yes.
a little different, and I have different kind of life scenario, life circumstances. You know, I run my own business, but having family still at home and managing all that, well, and I don't, people might be shocked to hear this, I don't always agree with you either.
Yes, I know.
And so that just brings additional dynamics that I think can add some texture and some depth to what we're talking about.
Well, I think there's sometimes when you're in a monologue, I might say something that kind of either goes unexplored, sort of mm-hmm. best case, or unchallenged, worst case. And I think, and I'm just publicly in front of all these thousands of people that are listening, just saying, I want to give you permission to challenge me, to go deeper, to ask me the tough questions, because I think it'll be better for the audience if we do that.
You know, much of your audience, they're entrepreneurs. Many of them are business owners. They own their own business. And a lot of them work in solo. They work kind
right.
of in isolation or they work alone. And so what you're talking about here is really intentionally inviting people to participate with you in what you're doing. And it has huge value. I mean, this whole idea of collaboration and partnership has huge value besides just the enjoyment, mm-hmm. but the enjoyment factor is one of those. So why don't you talk for us a minute about the benefits of doing collaboration partnership as a business owner?
Well, I think this is true for everybody that's a business owner or a leader, but, you know, there's great power in collaboration. And I love this Bible verse from Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10 that says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the other will lift him up. And that's the value of doing something together. You know, the sum is greater than its parts. And I really believe in that. And, you know, you can work solo. And for years, I was a solo practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really invite people into my life to work with me. In some ways, and I mean, I don't say this with pride, but in some ways, I thought I was the smartest guy in the room and I didn't really need anybody else until I took some hard tumbles myself. And then I realized, no, I desperately need people. And it's just a lot more fun to me when I collaborate. I get the best of everyone's thinking. And again, I think it's an opportunity to make the product way better when you've got the collaboration.
So you have increased satisfaction. So working with other
yep.
people, that's one of the benefits. You have the multiplied results. You talked about that a little bit, that when you get additional kind of people there working with you, that you can see some kind of, I guess, better traction on the projects that you're working on.
Yeah, you can, because the interesting thing about it is whenever you involve people that are highly talented, they usually bring along other highly talented people. You know, like attracts like. People that are really good attract really good people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best ways to up your game or to improve your results in any area of your life is get around people that are accomplishing those kind of results that you want to accomplish and begin to collaborate with them. Work with them, work for them, whatever
mm-hmm.
you can do to kind of involve them in your work and in your life.
You know, talk for a minute, too, about inviting diversified perspectives, because there's some people that believe that they really only want to surround themselves with people that think the same way they do, that believe the same things that they do, and kind of make it, you know, really homogenous. But I mean, what you're wanting to do is adding in some diversity and some different perspectives. And where's the value in that?
Well, I see huge value in diversity. And this isn't just a politically correct statement, because I know it's, you know, it's
yes.
kind of the thing to say,
mm-hmm.
okay, let's have a diverse perspective. But there's a reason for it. There's a very deep, important rationale. And it comes from my worldview that God didn't create a monochromatic world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he created a world with immense diversity, not only diversity in ethnicity and in race and background, experience, geography, all that. But that's what makes life interesting. Like, for example, when I go to a party, and I've been to parties in New York where I've been at a book signing or whatever, and there'll be people, like we used to publish a lot of political books at Thomas Nelson when I was there. We had a whole line of political books. I always loved talking with the people that had a sort of an opposite political perspective as I did, because it's not much fun to me to talk to people that agree with me, because that doesn't grow my knowledge base. It doesn't challenge me to think. But when I'm talking with somebody that disagrees with me, that's what I'm learning. And so I really have tried to practice diversity. And I think this is kind of the natural evolution of that. When I was at Thomas Nelson, for example, I had 5 executive vice presidents, and 2 of them were women. And it wasn't that I really intentionally said, you know, I got to somehow load balance this. Mm-hmm. So I've got a certain number of women and all that. I mean, it wasn't that calculated about it. It's just that I would try to find the best talent I could, regardless of what, you know, their background was or their gender or whatever. And it really added to the team immensely, you know, to have a female perspective. And of course, I'm the father of 5 daughters. So that's enriched my lives in unbelievable ways. And so I think the diversity has really practical application. And I think for a business, if you're a business serving a diverse audience, if you don't have a diverse employee base or a diverse executive team or a diverse staff, you're going to be missing the audience. You're going to be missing part of that audience that you want to be reaching. And I felt like adding you to the equation would give a perspective that's really important in leadership, because it's not just the men that are leading today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so we've talked about so far the benefits of collaboration, this increased satisfaction, because you just wanted to start enjoying this. I mean, life really is too short to be doing something you're not enjoying.
Absolutely. Especially as much work as a podcast is, because I was spending like a half day a week on the podcast, and to get it, you know, essentially scripted, and then I tried not scripting it, and I tried a number of different things, but none of it increased my satisfaction.
So the increased satisfaction is a big piece of it, and we get to work with other people. I mean, we say that sometimes people can be very difficult, right? But if you surround yourself with the right people, it really can increase your satisfaction, whatever project you're working on. So the increased satisfaction, this broadened perspective. So we invite kind of diversified perspectives. Mm-hmm. It really can open our eyes to see things that we would have missed or wouldn't have noticed before, just having that additional perspective. Third benefit, this diversified talent base. Now, you only mentioned this briefly, but I want to talk about this a little bit more. So, you know, you're pretty talented. You have a lot of different gifts, but you can't do it all.
I can't. There's only a few things I do well.
There's things that you can't do well. So now I'm going to ask you a tough question. What do you not do well?
Well, I'm a great starter. I'm not a great maintainer. I mean, for me to be able to finish 100 episodes took all my willpower to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just was bullheaded enough to not quit. But that's really hard for me. And so there's some things like once I kind of get past the creation phase, and I think this is sort of the entrepreneurial curse, once I've created it, the idea of maintaining it and putting into place the systems to run it and all that has to be done in a business really wears me out. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, there are people that are really, really good at all those things that I'm not so good at. Like, can I do accounting? Yeah, I've actually had a lot of practice. I don't have a degree in accounting, but I've done a lot of accounting. But I don't like it. Like, once I've set up the chart of accounts and get it just like I want it, then I'm not interested anymore. So I have an accountant that does all that. I have a financial advisor. I've got about 14 different people on my team that handle the parts of it that I don't do well and I'm not good at.
All right, diversified talent base. And it's great to hear you. First of all, it's great to hear you admit that there are things that you are not good at, because, you know, a lot of us see you as being, you know, you kind of cover it all. You seem to be so talented in multiple areas. But the truth is you have a fabulous team working behind you, and you have multiple people that are covering areas that would be your weaknesses, what you're not strong at. And they're very good at it. And not only does it help you succeed, but you give them an opportunity to thrive as well.
Which for me is the real joy. Building people, developing talent is the thing that really makes it all worthwhile to me. And I try to be intentional in my recruiting to recruit the things that I don't have. So, for example, one of the first things that I do when I'm thinking about a new position to fill is just to identify it and then to flesh out the job description and start to recruit those people and bring them into kind of the inner circle. And I've even done some things like identify the strengths of all my team members and say, and I love strength finders.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And I've plotted it on an Excel spreadsheet with my team and say, okay, what are the strengths are we missing? Because if you don't have that strength represented on your team, it's a gap. And so I think to be intentional as a leader about developing your team, it means you want as many of those, I think it's 34 strengths that are in the strength finders thing, you want as many of those as you can represented. And it's a real scary thing if that gets lopsided. You know, if I recruit only people like me, like my number one strength is achiever. By the way, is yours?
My number one is strategic, but achiever is a really close number
two. Yeah, strategic's in mine too. But if I just recruited people that were achievers and strategic, and Megan is strategic as well, my daughter, that would create an insane business,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's not all about achieving. It's not all about strategy. There's a lot of tactics and a mm-hmm. lot of administration and a lot of relationships that have to be nurtured, a lot of things that are non-achieving. So I think as leaders, we have to be very intentional about that.
Totally agree. All right. One last benefit that we haven't touched on yet, but I really want to talk about is this idea of that collaboration can increase our ability to be flexible and adaptive. You know, when we work alone, we get really used to having it our way and doing what we want when we want to do it. We don't have to listen to or answer to anybody else. But when we work with other people, it really challenges sometimes our ability to adapt or adjust to what the needs of somebody else or whatever. So how has collaboration really helped your ability to be more adaptable?
Okay, so get this. On the Strength Finders, there's 34 different strengths, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm right on that. So you can buy the top five when you take the test, or you can pay a little bit more. I think it's like $80 and you can get all 34. So what's really interesting is to get the bottom five.
I bet.
To find the things that you really suck at. So my number 34, the very last one on my list, is adaptability.
Really?
Yeah. So like that's why when somebody has a different it's in a plan that we've created or something, I kind of, I probably don't show this outwardly as much as I used to, but I kind of bristle. Because it's like, no, we've got, you know, the path, we've got the plan, we're going to do that. So bringing into your life, well, first of all, let's just say this, having kids, does that create adaptability?
Oh, my words, yes.
I mean,
what, if you aren't flexible before you have children, you better learn to be really
absolutely,
quick.
Absolutely. And the same thing in a team too, because people are going to have a different perspective and they're not wrong. They're just seeing stuff that you don't see. And so the thing I like about change, about collaboration, is that it forces me to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't intentionally put yourself in a position where you have to grow, you're going to get in a rut. And I don't remember who said this, but, and I can't probably even quote it exactly, but you know, the difference between a rut and a, what is it? A burial plot, you know, it's just doesn't have the ends on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it's kind of like that. I mean, if you're not intentionally changing, if you're not growing, if you're stuck, you're going backwards, you're dead. And I want to grow.
It's true. Change is the only means for growth. You have to be willing to kind of step into it, embrace it, push through it. And many times, though, we hit that change place or that something that's uncomfortable or awkward, and we want to turn back because, you know, we're kind of wired up to avoid pain. You know, we want to relieve pain, avoid it, kind of cure it. And so when we bump up against it, we easily can run away from it. But the idea is to push through.
That's right. And see the change and improvement that can come in us as a result of it.
So let's talk for a minute about the obstacles. So those who are against collaboration, you know, what are the biggest obstacles to it when people think, nope, I just don't want to go there. I can't do it. I don't want to do it. What are the reasons why people would opt not to do something like what you're doing right now?
Well, I think, first of all, nobody would be, I think, overtly opposed to it because that wouldn't be cool. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. supposed to be for collaboration. But I've seen this in corporations where there are people who say they're for collaboration, but they're not really for collaboration.
It's kind of sabotage.
Yeah, like sort of passive-aggressive
kind of,
kind of thing. And I think it comes from they really do think they're the smartest person or they don't really need anybody else. Or, you know, it slows down the process. You know, when you have to collaborate, it's a lot slower than being a dictator. Being a dictator is very efficient. It's just not as effective over the long haul.
Could be insecurity as well. I found that those who are the most secure are more comfortable with inviting outside input.
Yep.
Those that struggle with significant insecurity are threatened by any kind of outside involvement.
Yeah, and I think you have to invite that into your life and be self-aware enough as a leader to realize that you need these other people and that the sum is going to be greater than the parts if you'll do that.
So now you've written several posts and talked several times about the idea of delegation. How collaboration and delegation are very different things. So just quickly, talk about the difference there because this isn't a delegation project. This really is collaboration.
No, that's right. With delegation, you're making an assignment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
With collaboration, you're inviting somebody's opinion into it and you're asking what they think. You know, you're giving them a seat at the table so that they truly, together, we can work together and create this thing we're trying to create. Now, it's a fine line and I don't want to, you know, cut it too fine. But it's a different thing.
And it really takes both people that have this kind of mentality of collaboration to make it work.
Well, and sometimes you have to get to the point where you collaborate, you figure out the plan, what you're going to do. Everybody has a seat at the table. Everybody voices their opinion. Then you have to make the assignments. And that's in delegation.
For those of you who are listening today, we are so glad that you are here. It's been a thrill for me personally to have my first episode here with you, Michael. Thank you so much for inviting me
here.
When it comes to your business and your leadership, regardless of where you're leading or doing your business, it's important for you to embrace the idea of change, first of all. It's not going to be comfortable. You're not going to necessarily like it, but it's so necessary for growth and for your own personal growth as well as the growth of your business. And a big piece of that is collaboration. I mean, change is inviting different people and new people all the time to participate in what you're doing. And it's absolutely essential for the health of your business for so many reasons. But a few of those that we talked about today is this idea of increased satisfaction. You're going to enjoy what you do so much more. Also, you're going to find that you'll have a broadened perspective. You know, ways that you see things up until now, and you thought you really saw all sides of the story. Well, let me tell you, when you invite other people to participate, you will see things from new perspectives that you never had any idea before. You're also going to discover a diversified talent base, improved flexibility and adaptability in yourself, and ultimately, and this is what we are looking for and shooting for here, is multiplied results. We want to see this podcast continue to grow and this content to get in the hands of so many people that really need to know that we're cheering for them and what they do. If you joined us today and this was an episode that you really enjoyed and you got value from, I want to encourage you to head over to iTunes and share it with your friends, with your circles, with your audiences, and also take the time to rate it. This is a difference maker for us. We want to get this content into as many hands as possible, as I mentioned, and you rating it really does make the difference for that. It helps get the word out. If you have a question about today's podcast that we didn't answer, or even if you have a question that may not be related to this topic at all whatsoever, we want to hear from you. This matters to us. This is an ongoing conversation. Michael and I are talking, but we really see you as the third person at the table. So head over to Michael's website at michaelhyatt.com/question, and you can either send an email or leave a voicemail, and I will personally be listening to those, and we will be discussing many of them here on this podcast. Once again, it's been a privilege to have you with us today. Until next time, remember, this is your life and it's a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I talk about the 6 rules you need to know to create effective slide presentations. So now when you sat down, I assume that you had probably written your presentation ahead of time, right, before you start working on the slides?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
by the way, that's not something you just take for granted, because a lot of people want to crack open their slide software, whether it's PowerPoint or Apple's iWork Keynote, and they want to start making slides before they really know what they're going to say. And you've got to figure out what it is you're going to say. And then the slides come along as an ancillary component to amplify or extend the message, but they can't be the message.
That's next time on This Is Your Life.